Welcome to the Market Moment. My name is Matt Walters, here with Eli Freeman and Lee Mackey. We've got some good topics to cover this week, some interesting conversations to be had. But before that, remember you can join the Market Moment community online by hitting the subscribe button. Besides the weekly podcast episodes, we have two other episodes that we've been putting out. The Data Brief, hosted by Eli Freeman, yours truly, and Market 101, which will be hosted by all the other advisors like Ashton, Davis, John Martfeld, and others. And those are focused on financial literacy online. And so we appreciate your support. If you like the content that we're putting out, please subscribe, like, and comment. We really appreciate that. Yeah. So, guys, let's jump into it. So I was talking about, we're going to talk about Tesla, but I was joking about before we got on here. Last week we were talking about Tesla. And I went back and listened because I remembered saying something about this. Like at the very end of the conversation, I was like, well, I guess the moral of the story is don't buy Tesla. Tesla's up 36%.
How's that going for you?
Tesla's up 36% since I said that. So
that's where Matt goes. But long term.
Yeah.
Long term.
Yeah. Correct. They're going to zero. No. Yeah. So maybe it's a friendly reminder to don't take stock tips off of jokes made on podcasts. But Tesla stock up big. Shares of Tesla rose sharply on Monday after the electric car maker passed a significant milestone to roll out driver-assisted technology in China. The company's share price spiked more than 16% on Monday. Tesla on Sunday said local Chinese authorities removed the restrictions on its cars after passing the country's data security requirements. Tesla also reportedly scored a deal with, I've never known how to pronounce that. Is that Baidu?
Baidu, yeah.
Baidu, yeah. That would give Musk's firm access to the Chinese internet giant's mapping and navigation technology for Tesla's FSD feature. So this is obviously big news for Tesla. China is a big market for them. Thoughts? I'm probably going to keep my mouth shut on this one a little bit after last week. But
you know, you never know with Musk. I mean, he's a genius and...
I mean, Tesla stock's been down big too. It's not like that's a 16% bounce on Monday after an all-time high.
Correct.
I think they're down. We looked at it last week, like 30% over the last 6 months.
They're down almost 50% for a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got some room to go. Mm-hmm.
something that could come from this is you'll consistently see China create volatility in individual stocks because China is so volatile in their policies and what they pass and what they take away. And Tesla's already a volatile stock. So you take that and then you pair Tesla with some more volatility of the Chinese government. And it could just make for a really fun ride for Tesla investors, especially people long.
Good point. China can impact, a multitude of individual stocks. Just look at Apple and, a lot of the tech companies that are trying to do business.
Just depending on what they feel. China.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Tesla, as we talked about a little bit last week, it's going to continue to have a hard time until charging stations become more prevalent. I mean, what I hear from Tesla owners here in the U.S., here in Northwest Arkansas, is, they like it, but it's very inconvenient when it comes to, doing more than just driving around town, going from work to home and the grocery store and things
like that. Well, one thing that we said last week... was that the tough part about the EV market right now is there's so much legislative risk involved, right? In terms of regulation, and this is a perfect example. Like something went well for them, and it's the stock price has reacted, but the opposite can be true too. And so whether it's legislative risk internationally or regulatory risk here in the United States. It's such a new thing that we're still just kind of figuring out. And so you have to expect these big swings along the way.
I would like to see a correlation between EV sales, Tesla sales, and the price of gas. If gas plummets, oil plummets, and we're back to gas at $1.50 a gallon, people are less focused on, fuel efficient cars. Yeah. And so
I don't think people make those. I don't think people think like that, to be honest with you. I just think oil prices and gas prices are too volatile to,
make a decision on what kind of car you're going
to
buy.
Yeah. I mean, buying a car is such a huge financial commitment, especially now. I mean, you're not spending $20,000 on a brand new car, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a significant purchase. And so to go all in because of what gas prices have recently done, I personally don't know people
probably that, a little short-sighted. That think mm-hmm. You're probably right.
That way.
I did see, I saw a post, I follow an individual on Twitter who just keeps up with the used car and auto market. And he said he was talking with a subprime dealer. And whenever they deal with people who have bad credit, they say you have option A, option B, and option EV. Because of the new tax credits that are coming out EV vehicles, it's making it easier for more people to get into
A, B, and E.
See, that's a perfect example of like, hey, let's give people huge tax credits mm-hmm. for buying the vehicles we want them to buy.
I can't afford a new car, so I go buy a Tesla.
And just get the tax credit.
I would go buy diesel tomorrow if I got a massive tax credit for
it. Oh,
yeah. But I don't, yeah. Interesting. That's pretty funny. A, B, or EV?
Option A, B, and EV.
What do you know what the tax credit is?
I was trying to pull it up. Keep talking, and I'll find something.
I may be completely wrong, but $7,500 is sticking in my brain for some reason.
Okay.
Because I know somebody that got
that's
one.
For, I think that's for a new one. the credit equals 30% of the sales price up to a maximum credit of $4,000. If you buy a qualified used electric vehicle or fuel cell vehicle from a licensed dealer for $25,000 or less.
Oh.
So that's for the used
It's market, trying to get used EVs purchased.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's
In the fine print, it's within 30 days, you'll have to buy a new battery that will also cost you $25,000. It'll
cost you up to 30% of the used vehicle.
Yeah. Well, interesting.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of talking about Tesla, to be honest. But they keep making the news, so we have to keep talking about them.
Do you want to give your buy-sell recommendation?
Yeah, sell. No.
No. That was a joke.
Yeah, that was a joke. All right, stagnation fear. Some Wall Street strategists are growing concerned. The U.S. economy could be headed toward a 1970s-style stagnation scenario and recent signs of stubbornly high inflation and a cooling economy. Quote from David Donabedian.
Sorry. We're so sorry.
This was a worst of both worlds report. Slower than expected growth, higher than expected inflation. He is the CIO of CIBC Private Wealth mm-hmm. U.S. The biggest setback is the acceleration in core inflation, and in particular, the services sector rising above 5% annual rate. Stagflation fear surged in 2022 as the Fed began aggressively hiking rates. And then the last thing, incomes and consumer spending rose solidly in March, which should provide a little reassurance that the slowdown in the first quarter GDP reported yesterday is not a sign of stagflationary economies. This is from Bill Adams, chief economist for Comerica Bank. So, you know, you've got different people obviously viewing the data and kind of seeing different trajectories from here. Mm-hmm. What are y'all's thoughts?
Well, I can see exactly
where the... Be careful predicting 70-style stagflation.
I can see where the fear is coming from.
Sure.
If the economy is rising pretty close to what inflation is, that's exactly the definition of what stagflation would be. To get into a prediction as to what is coming is difficult, but the consumer is still so strong, and you look at what the consumer is able to purchase and able to buy, and as long as the consumer is strong, the economy will continue to grow, which is primarily the concern. The difficult part is if inflation stays persistent. But the inflation data, we were talking about it before we got on this. Each inflation data that's come out, and this is cherry picking, but it seems like each time that the new inflation data comes out, it's just one or two different factors that are rising quickly, and many of the other underlying factors are actually slowing down. Like, for example, this last year, I think everyone can agree that their car insurance has gone up in a drastic amount, and that's been one of the driving leaders for inflation. So if we can just get little things like that to come back in check year over year, then I would think if we can keep the economy like it is today and get some of those inflationary pressures in check, we'll be back to normal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's we've talked about like from a very different, but you know, the same kind of concept, I guess. That didn't make sense. But like on the national debt, if the, you know, if your country's growing, it's like you can absorb and handle mm-hmm. more and more debt. Same is true as like in terms of prices, like you can handle and manage higher and higher prices if the economy's growing mm-hmm. and people are making more money. And, you know, but when that dries up, higher and higher prices, it gets really, really difficult. And then there is going to be a point inevitably, if that sustains itself for a longer period of time, where the consumer starts to be impacted, and you know, that I think that's a, I mean, that to your point, I see exactly why people are worried about that.
I will say, last night, Mary Grace and I were driving home. We went to our church small group, and we were on the way home, and we were talking about inflation, which is rare. That doesn't typically happen.
No comment.
But, yeah, I'm not going to judge your marriage right now.
But Mary Grace was asking, because we're planning to build a house, so we're talking about interest rates and how they operate, and she said, "Well, what do you actually think?" And I personally think inflation will stay at this 3% rate for a much longer period of time than what the Federal Reserve is stating. And the reason that I think that is because of how much cash President Trump and President Biden have thrown into the economy. And to say that we'll get inflation to slow while pumping the economy with new money is so difficult, because new money naturally creates inflation. Mm-hmm. And unless we can get the spending of the government in check, or the cycle of money moving through the economy in check, I don't think we can get back to that 2%, not with how much we've thrown in.
You know, two quick things. You mentioned about insurance at the J.P. Morgan conference I went to a few weeks ago. Shelter and auto insurance makes up 2.6 of the 3.2 inflation rate. Mm. So I don't even know what percentage that is, but
a lot.
75%
yeah.
of the inflation rate is tied up in shelter and car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the middle of repricing mine. And, man, I mean, it's high. And the second thing is, you know, I think that everybody had kind of gotten used to the inflation story. The last CPI number that came out a week or so ago is the one that kind of shocked everybody, that showed that the economy was, in fact, beginning to kind of slow down more than they thought. And that's why the stagflation topic is back. I don't think it's imminent. I mean, I think we would have to have, you know, it almost requires a perfect storm to create stagflation. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think it should be a worry, but
don't worry, stagflation is transitory.
Yeah.
Josh, yeah.
Here we go.
If you hear Chairman Powell use those words at his next meeting,
be worried.
Then be worried.
Yeah. Run for the hills.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about auto insurance and, like, why is it going up so much? I don't know if you heard this. It's on a podcast that we listen to often. But, you know, they were talking about how the increasing price of new and used vehicles, right, the replacement cost.
Yeah.
Somebody has a wreck, like, it's really expensive to replace that vehicle. The repair costs, because there's so much, like chips, technology in vehicles today.
Fiberglass and then, instead of metal.
Yeah.
And then the labor has gone up significantly because of the skills that you have in to repair a car, right? It's not just someone who knows how to fix a carburetor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got to have the technology on site and the people trained and skilled enough to do all of that. And so I was hearing that. I was like, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense, like why auto insurance is going up. And I don't know the rate of change and if that's justified, but it definitely makes sense that it would be more now than it was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago in a significant way. I mean, vehicles are outrageous, right? Haley drives a van, which just, it drives me nuts every time I get in it. So I'm like, every once in a while, I'll go down the path of like, what if I convince her to go buy an SUV, and I'll go start looking at like new SUVs? It's like,
it's a price of a home.
You almost can't buy it if you want like a pretty nice SUV for less than $80,000.
Yeah.
I remember growing up.
Go to Tulsa, you're buying homes in Tulsa for $80,000.
Yeah, I mean, my first home 30 years ago was $75,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Our first home not that long ago was $135,000, and you wouldn't have to look too far to get close to spending that on a vehicle.
Yeah,
you know, which is just wild. I mean, that I remember growing up, $80,000, you were going to get like a brand new Ferrari. Like that was like a
And hey, now it's a
GMC Yukon.
Yeah, yeah. Base.
Now it's like,
oh, you want mats?
Want leather?
It's crazy. So the
brakes,
the auto insurance, the side of things makes sense, and that's not going anywhere.
Well, and home policies are up as well, and you know every natural disaster, every thing. You know, I mean, look at California. Look how many insurance companies are exiting California. I mean, it's becoming an issue to where, you know, California has a certain number of insurance companies that will even do business there. And the big ones are not.
Well,
because of all the natural disasters.
They're changing the way they're pricing the home insurance policies as well, because, you know, home values have risen significantly as well. So it's kind of the same story there. And if you had like a flat dollar deductible, right, the insurance company was taking that additional risk, mm-hmm. right? And so they've started changing. I know ours now is a percent deductible.
Huh.
Like it's a 1% of home value. And so as that gets reset and as you want to increase your insurance amount, like your deductible is going up.
A percent? That's interesting.
Yeah. And so, and then there's been a lot of insurance companies pull out of markets altogether.
Yeah.
My buddy the other day was like, dude, my insurance company called me and said they're leaving Arkansas. I was like, what a call.
Yeah.
So he's shopping.
Wow.
All right, last topic. We've been doing a lot of – Eli went to a tax planning conference a couple month or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've been really focusing on this with clients and doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work. Let's spend a few minutes talking about kind of what we're focusing on just on the planning side of things, in particular, specifically with mm-hmm. tax planning long-term. Mm-hmm. Eli, I'll let you kind of
– So it's difficult to go without – going very long, we could probably do an entire podcast this, but giving the backstory as to what's going into our tax planning, primarily what is happening right now with most of our tax planning goes back to Trump's tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump cut the taxes back in 2018. His tax cuts are set to sunset in after 2025.
Right.
So we have 2024 and we have 2025. In 2026, the tax brackets, unless something changes, which in my opinion is a slim shot, we'll go back to those old tax rates. Well, that lower standard deductions. So right now the standard deduction is really high, $30,000 for a married couple. That'll be lowered, and then all tax brackets will be higher. So the 12% will turn to 15, 22, 25. And there's a chance that those tax brackets also get shrunk
mm-hmm.
so that the people who are high earners go from paying 22% to maybe 28%. In taxes. So some pretty drastic changes. So on the planning side, what does that tell us, or what can we consider? Well, the first thing that you should consider or can consider for your individual plan is, well, should I be paying more in taxes now at lower tax rates?
Right.
And so what we've been focusing on and what we've been looking at is, one, where are you contributing? So which accounts are you contributing to? For example, if you can contribute to a SEP IRA, or a simple IRA, or just a traditional IRA, but you're in tax rates that you want to pay, maybe contributing and then immediately converting to Roth and paying the tax this year. So paying the tax at the lower rates, knowing I'm expecting to be paid in tax at higher rates in the future. Or if you're getting close to retirement, just maximizing those tax brackets, those lower tax brackets, knowing you're going to be in higher tax brackets. Most of that is either by contribution or by conversion. So taking money from IRA or 401k, and mm-hmm. Where possible, converting it into Roth. The benefit to that is, unless something changes legally, and there's always a chance that something changes legally, the Roth currently is protected from future tax rate increases. So you're taking out some form of legislative risk
mm-hmm.
to an extent, right? Mm-hmm. From the pre-tax moving it into post-tax. So been talking through a lot of diversifying not only your investments, diversifying the location of your investments.
Yeah.
So traditional, non-qualified, and Roth, being a part of your comprehensive retirement plan.
So Eli, to make it easy for those that are listening, I mean, somebody's out there and says, well, I have money in an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Should I convert to a Roth? What is there a general answer to that question?
My general answer is yes. But that's before looking at it.
I think it's a question everybody should ask themselves and look at. But I've come across many scenarios where it's like, you know, it probably doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's not like having the goal is to have $0 in tax-deferred accounts. But that's very dependent on your situation and what your income is going to look like in the future and mm-hmm. post-retirement.
And how much can an individual convert at any one time?
It's unlimited.
Okay.
It's completely unlimited.
Up to their – where. No, makes sense.
Now, what's prudent, what's wise,
yeah.
is to stay within certain brackets and not to go into higher brackets than what you would need to. But, I mean, the government's not going to be mad at you paying taxes.
So the long and short is, like, historically, based where tax brackets are now, we're at a really low point, actually. And so it's prudent to at least consider looking at whether it's on the contributions that you're making or additional planning and looking at like conversions, at the very least maximizing the your current bracket that you're in, right? If you're in a 12 or the 22 or whatever, like how what does that go up to? What's the highest income level at that point? And should I consider trying to pay as much at that rate as possible? It's just something to look at. We're not recommending that or advising that for everybody, but it is very prudent. It's something that we've looked at with clients for the last several years and have really dug into over the last year. And I think even, you know, let's say rates sunset back into effect, you know, the old rates here in a couple of years, I still think a lot of things of this could be prudent just based off of where we think tax rates are likely headed over the coming decade or two. Yeah, the 22 is going to be 25, but 25 might still be the lowest you ever see moving forward.
So. And if your assumption is it's either going to be 25 or higher.
Right. Then you'd rather just pay the
25. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard because so much about financial education and retirement planning for years and years and years was about like tax deferral. Right. And
you'll make less when you retire. That's the saying.
You'll make less. You'll be in a lower bracket. And that is absolutely true for a lot of people. It is. But not everybody.
Yeah. And you know, and for those that are in the top tax bracket now, it probably does not make sense to convert. Another question
unless
I had,
they're going to stay in the top bracket.
In the, in retirement. Yeah. Correct. For those out there that think, well, I'm willing to bet that Congress makes them permanent. Or
the tax cuts?
The tax cuts. What do you say to that? I mean, it still doesn't hurt.
Yeah, exactly what Matt said. Consider to continue to max out your current bracket. So if you have $30,000 left in your current bracket and you plan to probably stay similar in income for a long period of time, okay, let's max out that, pay the tax now, knowing it's either going to be this or it's going to be higher.
Right.
And that's the thing
about, it's not going down.
Yeah. That's the thing about it. Even if they made them permanent, let's assume you make $100,000 a year and your goal in retirement is to live off $100,000 a year. You're not benefiting from deferring anything. Right. So there's nothing advantageous about choosing that deferral. But there is that like question mark out there of like, well, what if it does change in the future? And so it's just dig into it, you know, talk to your advisor, research, look at it. You've got this year, next year in terms of what is kind of known. And then we'll see what it looks like after that. And, you know, we'll obviously here at the firm keep planning as proactively as possible.
And we recommend, you know, clients bring in tax returns for us to help with that. That way we can kind of gauge.
Yeah, technology has allowed us to be so efficient on how we review these things and how we make recommendations and how we come to the calculations. So just kind of wanted to end on that today because I know we talk about it a ton internally and probably not as much as we should on the podcast. So tax planning. Fun stuff. Call it.
You and Mary Grace can talk about tax planning this evening when you're in the car.
that'll be next small group.
Next small group. Nice.
All right. Well, as always, we appreciate you guys listening. I actually, Zoe, you're going to love me for doing this. She put a dad joke, and it's funny, so I'm going to say
I like it.
I read it, and I actually laughed. So it said, I told my wife she should embrace her mistakes. She gave me a hug. That's pretty good.
That probably hits a little close
to home.
Sorry, man.
Yeah. I usually skip Zoe's dad jokes, but that was good, so I wanted to read it. Be sure to leave us a comment, like or subscribe to the various channels that we have out there. We'd really appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you guys next week.
Have a great week.
The hosts of this show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC registered investment advisor located in Rogers, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak to your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, click on the link in the episode description below.